Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Evan Roberts. Tiki Barber. It's Evan and Tiki on WFAN, The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Another one of those days in New York City sports. How we doing? Evan and Tiki on a Friday, the Friday before our New York football teams battle the swing state of Pennsylvania over the weekend, with the New York Giants welcoming in Saquon Barkley, Snaquan Barkley, whatever you want to call him. The Jets going to Pittsburgh for a huge Sunday night game. We're all over it as the show goes on. The New York Mets are fighting for their season. Will the OMG Mets go down in five? Will it end tonight at Citi Field? More on that later. But I want to welcome New York Yankee fans to stressful, I want to punch my own self in the face, October baseball. Because last night, it is easy as an IBO or as a baseball fan to say, gee golly, that was a great game. And it was a great game. It was unbelievable. It had all these amazing moments. But what that was one of those losses that you seethe over. One of those losses that are in your hands. And the ultimate question the New York Yankees are going to have to answer today and tomorrow, and every single Yankee fan has to answer right now, is this going to be a game that you're going to talk about for the next 20 years because it led to the demise of the 2024 Yankees? Or is this a game that, as I like to call it, is a fart in the wind? Because that's the kind of loss that you'll never forget. It's Andrew Nembhard, Knick fans, in Game 3 against the Pacers. It's Joe Harris sucking, Net fans, against the Bucks. It's the Ranger fans against the Lightning a couple of years ago in the conference finals. It's Dave Roberts, I'm sorry, stealing second base in 2004. Or is it that fart in the wind that the Yankees move on from, and you win the series anyway, and it was a classic, and it doesn't keep you up at night 6 months from now?
Smells like a fart in the wind to me, Ev.
Look at you.
Smells like ketchup and onions to me.
Look at you.
No, I am obviously upset as a Yankee fan today, as we all would be, because you feel like one got away, and maybe we will get to the point where we look back on that. But my truthful upsetness today is that I feel like, as a Yankee fan, we were more robbed of a classic moment that we could remember for the rest of our lives.
Yes.
As opposed to feeling like we were robbed of a series. There's a good chance this is Game 3, 2009 ALCS, losing in 13 innings to the Angels. And as much as this went back and forth.
By the way, that's a great reference, because yeah. I got to be honest with you, I don't remember that at all.
Because the Yankees went on to win the series?
Absolutely.
The Guardians were a good team. The Guardians punched back, and more on all the layers of this, on whether Weaver was due to blow one, Holmes was due to blow one. The Yankees and Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton having that back-to-back moment, and Judge could have finally had his true Yankee playoff moment.
Yeah.
It likely gets forgotten about, and that's what I'm more upset about today. That could have been the signature win of this entire season.
Well, here's why. If you're confident, and if you Yankee fans are confident at 888-808-1019 that this is a fart-in-the-wind kind of loss, like, I got to be honest, I'm so glad you brought that up. I seem to remember almost every Yankee playoff game over the last 25 mm-hmm. years, and you bring up a Game 3 loss to the Angels in 09. I have no memory of it.
Because they won a series.
And that's the definition of this. The definition is you win the series anyway, and you forget about this game.
Big Christmas who?
Yeah, right. He means nothing to you. You're never going to mention Big Christmas ever again. But the key is responding to it. And the key is, can the New York Yankees quickly make that not matter and make this game not matter? Now, you brought up the Judge factor. Like, it sucks for you right now, besides losing a game, that you lost this great moment from Aaron Judge.
Yep.
I'm going to make you a promise. If the New York Yankees win this series, if the New York Yankees are going to the World Series for the first time in 15 years, Aaron Judge will have other moments. Yeah. It's going to happen. So while that was stupidly crazy in the eighth inning, especially the trajectory of the ball, it's a line drive. Even Aaron Judge doesn't think it's getting out. For that ball to go out in that spot with two outs against the supposed best closer in Major League Baseball, it's epic.
Yes.
But I think if that's your concern, don't be concerned, because if the Yankees respond, Aaron Judge will be a big part of why.
And that's another reason I feel good. Unlike when the Yankees lost Game 2 to Kansas City in the first round, we had so many questions about Aaron Judge specifically coming alive at the plate. Aaron Judge is having an awakening here, and we saw it little by little as he started to hit the ball harder.
I didn't see that in the first three at-bats of last night's game.
No, but the point is the track record of the last couple games. You just know that he's not a dead dog walking to the plate now. And
right.
To have that kind of thrilling moment, and Giancarlo, by the way, right on cue, hitting cleanup behind Judge to back him up on that, I don't think that that's the last time they have a spotlight like that. So again, it's on Luis Gil not imploding today. It's on holding on and making sure Rodon isn't terrible in Game 5. All those bridges will cross. But that moment just has to be a moment in Cleveland lore where they had one big game versus the Yankees. And over here, it's a fart in the wind. Nobody remembers as soon as a week from now.
I think, and I mentioned this to you guys last week, I always thought it was crazy. As the Yankees were piling up victories in the postseason, that people would try to diminish it. It doesn't matter how you win or who you beat or when you do it, as long as you win. But I do think if the Yankees respond to this, and luckily for them, they get an opportunity in about 6 hours, a game you'll hear right here on WFAN. If they respond to this the way you have confidence they will, and I am curious if most Yankee fans feel that way. Like, is there a confidence of, don't worry, it was a horrible loss, but we'll be fine? Or is that there that feel in the air of, this could be the beginning of the end and something we hate? But if they do respond, and you're right, I think it says a lot about this Yankee team. Because you're human.
Yeah.
You're human. Like, if you're Aaron Judge in center field, and there is a two-strike count on Lane Thomas, and there was, right after Luke Weaver turned a 1-6-3 double play, let's not forget this. There are two outs and nobody on and a two-strike count on Lane Thomas. And Aaron Judge is a human being. And he's standing in center field. And I can almost guarantee as he stands there, he's thinking to himself, well, we're about to win.
Yeah.
We're about to go up 3-0. I just hit the biggest home run maybe of my life. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, because it was out of nowhere, there's nobody in their right mind who could have felt at two outs and nobody on after Naylor grounded into that double play that the Yankees were going to blow that game.
There's probably a few fans that hit the car with two outs after that double play.
I think there's a chance. I think there's some Cleveland frauds who got up and left. But when Lane Thomas hits that double, and you're still like, okay,
I mean,
not the end of the world, and Big Christmas comes up, you're a strike away.
Yeah.
So to respond to that, because I do think these guys are humans, not just Luke Weaver, who I thought showed a lot responding by striking out the next hitter, Andrés Giménez.
Yeah.
It's not just Luke Weaver responding or Clay Holmes responding. If the Yankees respond the way you expect them to respond, and quite honestly, the way I expect them to respond, then I think this says a lot about the character of the 2024 Yankees, because that was a kick in the you-know-what kind of loss.
You got to be able to bounce back when you get punched in the mouth. And this team has leaders, Anthony Rizzo, Juan Soto, that have won World Series. And none of these trips are ever easy. There is always a bump in the road. Maybe not as heartbreaking and as debilitating as that was, but I really do trust the guts of this Yankee team. And I think the things that I saw in the loss yesterday, mainly from guys like Aaron Judge with that big at-bat, are why I have hope
so
moving forward.
We're showing confidence. It's a fart in the wind. IBO/I like the Yankees, Tiki Barber. Fart in the wind, or we're never going to forget this game for all the bad reasons.
No, I don't think you're going to forget the game because of the bad reasons, but I also...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it was a fart in the wind. I think that we finally have seen Aaron Judge coming back to being Aaron Judge. And interestingly, what Sean said yesterday, or maybe it was 2 days ago, about Luke Weaver actually became truth. Or unfortunately, you spoke it into existence, Sean.
Yeah.
That is, too many times seeing the same guy. And look, you want to believe in him because he's been amazing, Luke Weaver, but eventually guys get a beat on you, and when you make a bad pitch, as he did, it was just one, you make one bad pitch, you're down to your last strike, and it comes and bites you, right? That's the problem with Luke Weaver's usage. But again, to me, it's nothing that I'm worried about as a Yankee fan.
Yeah, so here's the thing about Luke Weaver. So there are two things. Number one, you brought up the usage. I absolutely think that's a fair worry. I totally get that. I also understand why Aaron Boone has used him as aggressively as he used him. Luke Weaver, since he's been moved into that closer's role, has been freaking awesome. And if you're right, the New York Yankees, and you've just been handed a lead courtesy of Aaron Judge and Mr. October Giancarlo Stanton, and there's two on and there's two out, and David Fry's coming up in the eighth inning, you damn right I'm putting Luke Weaver on the mound to get a four-out safe.
But that's why you don't put him in up 6-2 2 days ago.
Disagree. And I went through why the other day. I don't want to relitigate it, but you got to win those games. And Luke Weaver is the most reliable arm in the New York Yankee bullpen. With that said, like, I get it. Like, Tiki's right. He's pitched a lot. I don't even know if he's going to be available in a game like today. He may not be. So I totally get the concern about the usage, but I also think that when you're in October and you're trying to win a world championship, usage be freaking damned. And I also have confidence in Luke, and I think he showed this to you last night, that while he may make a bad pitch, Teak, and give up a two-run home run, the moment isn't going to be the reason why. He's not going to shrink in the moment, because after he gave up that home run, cool as a cucumber, he struck out Andrés Giménez, and that's a big deal.
No, absolutely. You're right about that. But I think you can't discount the fact that you kind of know what you're getting with Luke Weaver, and you just need him to make one mistake. He's going to throw that rising fastball that we've seen, or that changeup that just kind of drops off the table. And if he misses just a little bit, he leaves himself vulnerable. And I think the tendencies become, I don't want to say easier, but you've seen him multiple times, and all he needs to do is make one mistake, and you can take advantage of it. And that's exactly what happened last night.
Yeah.
Now, is it likely to happen again? Probably not, to be honest with you. I mean, call it luck. It's why you say it's a fart in the wind type of thing. But it happened, and it was devastating, because the Yankees could have taken a 3-0 lead, and the series, by all effects, would be over.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what they were so close to doing. And that's why I go to sleep last night, if I'm a Yankee fan, I'm very mixed, because a part of me says I'm up 2-1 and I think I'm the better team. Mm-hmm. And I think both of those things are true.
Yep.
But then the other part of me thinks, and I hate to bring these random things up, but I bring it up every single time, whether it was about the Mets losing game 2 to the Brewers, or the Mets losing game 2 to the Phillies, or whatever it is, the missed opportunity. The Rangers against the Lightning in the Eastern Conference Finals 3 years ago. The Nets against the Bucks just a few months ago with the Knicks and the Pacers. About to go up 3-0, and Andrew Nembhard hits a shot that he pulled out of his ass. And in those moments, like, be honest with me. Lukey can be honest with me about this. When Andrew Nembhard, because that's the most recent one, hit that three, aren't you saying to yourself, you know what? Fart in the wind. We'll be fine.
Absolutely.
Yes!
100%. Well, there's a problem here. And I lived it with the Rangers, the Nets. He lived it with the Knicks. Ev, those situations, the Knicks were already on the road to getting very beat up injury-wise. The Rangers were playing a team with full of Stanley Cup blood and pedigree. And the Bucks had Giannis and MVP. This comes into the opponent, too. I still don't respect the team in front of me, the Cleveland Guardians.
Wow.
That lineup, as much as they punch the Yankees in the mouth, I don't respect that they could come and beat this Yankee team three out of the next four games. And the best they got, by the way, that all I had to hear about, Mariano this, Mariano that, has their closer feeling this morning.
That's a good point.
Because all I heard was when he comes to the game over, I mean, Brian Anderson tried to tell us for seven innings the Yankees had no chance, and our best went up against their best and punched him in the mouth, too.
To give you perspective on Emmanuel Clase, Emmanuel Clase during the regular season, get ready for this, Tiki, gave up two home runs all season long. All year. In the postseason, he's already given up three, and he gave up two to the New York Yankees in the eighth inning last night. So for a guy who was, statistically, one of the most dominant closers we've ever seen, not only did he only give up two home runs all season long, how about this stat? He only gave up five earned runs all season long. He proceeded to give up two of them to the New York Yankees in the eighth inning. And I do agree with that point. If the Guardians have a one-run lead in the ninth inning tonight, if you're the New York Yankees or you're a Yankee fan, you're certainly not as intimidated by the ever-so-dominant Emmanuel Clase.
Yeah, Byung-Hyun Kim on line two. We've been there.
Wow.
I do not respect this team. I don't fear this team. And last night sucked. The Yankees are just fine. Keep the brooms out. The gentleman sweeps in play.
Jeez.
Confidence, Ev. You want to air the Yankee fan, right?
It's very disrespectful, Sean. Jeez.
Didn't Evan want arrogant Yankee fan?
I like it. No,
well,
all it took
was that loss to bring him out.
Right. You got pissed off now? So
I'm
now
pissed.
Now you're talking trash?
Yeah. Flexing around that whole city.
Wow.
Screw them.
I think you'll be fine. I hate to use that term. I think you'll be fine, but I do think that you have to give Cleveland a little bit of credit for getting off the mat.
It's a good job.
Think about how they got punched in the mouth yesterday.
Yeah.
They're leading the Yankees 3-1 for 5, 6, 7 innings.
Doubt.
And then all of a sudden in the eighth inning, there's two outs and nobody died.
Look, and for that fan base, I'm sure they're a good fan base. It's incredible. It's a cutesy little moment in Cleveland sports history. It's not going to matter by Sunday night. By Saturday night, really.
There you go. So Sean is a confident Yankee fan that last night's all-time classic is a fart in the wind. And it's so true. Like, it's true to think about this. I think right now we all remember every aspect of that game. That's one of the great baseball games you'll ever see. I mean, pound for pound, that was as wild a game as you'll ever see. But the truth is, and the reality is, if Sean's right, Tiki, and the Yankees win this series, we forget about this game. Like, if I tested you 5 years from now and said, hey, Teak, do you remember Game 3 Yankees-Guardians? You wouldn't remember it. But if the Yankees lose this series, you will remember it.
Of course. But that's a big if. I mean, I tend to be closer to Sean, not as arrogant as Sean is regarding the Guardians. But this is one you remember because they could have easily walked their way into the World Series with a sweep if they had won last night. Because that was a dramatic way to just put your foot on the throat of your opponent.
Yeah.
Especially if they had won that game the way that they would have come back and won that game with Aaron Judge finally being Aaron Judge and Stanton continuing the run that he's been on. But instead, it's a hiccup. That's how I like it. It's a hiccup.
Yeah, I think when you look back at the other examples I like to give about being this close to going 3-0, and those are the examples I tend to use. Not going up 3-1 or not going up 2-0. A chance to go up 3-0 in a series. And you can use Game 4 Yankees-Red Sox. I know that's a sensitive one, so I hate bringing that up. Or Rangers-Lightning from the conference finals a few years ago. Or Knicks-Pacers from the conference semifinals a few years ago. Or Nets-Bucks. Here's what I'd say about this. That's different than those. The Yankees were even closer to winning than those other three examples. Mm. They were a strike away. When Dave Roberts stole second base in 2004, I don't know if you remember that, but you don't, T, because you were playing. You were too busy having the Yankees and the Red Sox steal your spotlight.
I hated it, every moment of it.
So I'll ask Sean if he remembers when Bill Miller tied that game up in the bottom of the ninth inning against Mariano Rivera. How many outs were there?
Two, right?
There was zero outs.
Oh, what if
that's my point. So when we talk about how close you are to going up 3-0, the Yankees were close. They were three outs away. When we talk about how close the Rangers were to going up 3-0 on the Lightning, they were a period and a half away. Yeah. The New York Yankees last night were a strike away from going up 3-0. And for Yankee fans, How do they respond? And how do you feel about it? We'll get to your calls to start. 888-808-1019. There's a few other things from last night's Yankee game we need to get into, including Aaron Boone being proven wrong for some of his lineup decisions, where that Aaron Judge home run lands in Yankee history. And Aaron Boone got pissed off at a reporter. We'll get to all that coming up. I don't want to call last night's Yankees-Guardians game a great game, because here's the reality about what's a great game and what's a horrible game. If your team wins, it's a great game. I don't care if you win 35-2, 13-1, 9-8, 1-0, 2-1. If you win, it's a great game. If you lose, the game stinks. That's the way I view things. So, yeah, if you're a casual baseball fan or you're a Met fan or a non-Yankee fan, totally get looking at a game last night and saying, hey, that was a great game. But if you're a Yankee fan, there was nothing great about that game. You lost. So I will no longer, Tiki, be calling it a great game out of fairness.
But it was a great game. If you are, it's, I mean, as a Yankee fan, you're still not worried. So
what? Even if you're not worried, you're still like, was that great? I just invested 3.5 hours of my time and I lost. That's the way I would look at it. Now, we will try to make Yankee fans smile because Aaron Boone got angry at a reporter last night. And I think that's always nice comic relief for Yankee fans. We'll get to that coming up in the next few minutes. Plus, I was very critical of some of the decisions that Aaron Boone made with the lineup last night. We'll check in on if those were good decisions or bad decisions. But let's start it off with Chris, who's calling from Texas. How are you, Chris?
What's going on, boys?
What's up?
Oh, man, listen, being a Bronx guy living in Texas is definitely a chore, I can tell you that. Last night, I'll tell you, I was at my cigar lounge last night, I almost threw my phone through the TV when I was watching this game. I'll tell you, listen, whoever calls, listen, the kid Weaver pitched good in the ninth inning, he missed his spots.
Yep.
That's where he put himself in trouble. You know, whoever called a changeup in the 80s on a pinch hitter, when a guy's throwing 96 miles an hour as a fastball, you got a pinch hitter up, you got to make him work for that hit. You don't throw him an 80s, 85, 86 mile an hour changeup grapefruit down the middle. If you're going to get your butt kicked and your teeth kicked out, throw your best pitch. Please, I can take a loss when you throw your best stuff. But when you throw a grapefruit, a changeup, to a pinch hitter, and I mean, he was sitting on an off-speed pitch. He was sitting off-speed. There was no way he was going to catch up to a fastball. Best case scenario, foul tip. Throw the ball inside. You let the man extend his arms over the plate. I'm not understanding why you're not pounding this kid inside. Pinch hitter has not hit all game. He's got to work for that hit. Whoever called that pitch from the bench, because I think that pitch came from the bench.
I get the anger on it, but really what killed it was that it was right down the middle. That changeup needs to be down. It needs to be a hell of a lot more down than what it was. And so the problem is it just sat there. And it became easy for Big Christmas to hit the crap out of it. Sometimes it's as simplistic as, hey, Luke Weaver made a bad pitch. And you could argue he made two bad pitches because he did give up a double to Lane Thomas right before that. Because remember, they had a two-run lead. And that goes back to another moment in this game that is very underrated that cost the New York Yankees. In the top of the ninth inning, when you've already taken the lead and you get an Anthony Volpe leadoff walk and then Verdugo hits that ground ball to second base and Volpe gets himself into a rundown, right? He's going to be out at third base, but luckily for him, Jose Ramirez can't catch the baseball and Volpe did what A-Rod should have done, which is don't slap it away, just run right through him. And so the Yankees are given this great opportunity with second and third and nobody out. And I'm at the Met game watching this. I ended up rewatching it in the morning because sometimes it's very tough to focus when you're at one game watching another. But in the moment, while it was live, my thought was the Yankees need to score both of these runs. You have second and third, nobody out, with 9-1-2 coming up. And you can do that without a base hit. Austin Wells striking out. And look, Austin Wells did not look good at the plate. He eventually came in for Jose Trevino, but he was horrible offensively. That strikeout in the ninth inning was huge. And then Juan Soto striking out. I don't want to kill Juan Soto. He had an 0-for-4 day. It happens. But that's a big spot with two outs in the ninth inning to get that third run and give Weaver a little bit more insurance. And I thought that was another underrated aspect where the Yankees blew their opportunity.
I felt like Juan Soto was thrown off from the first at-bat of this game when he takes the pitch clock violation and he's complaining about that. But if you realize from that point forward, that was not typical Soto what we saw all postseason. I don't think he ever recovered from the first inning last night.
But you know what's weird about that? So for those that missed the first inning, it was a 5 o'clock first pitch. He gets called for a pitch clock violation, strike one. He then swung at the second pitch and hit the crap out of it. He got robbed by the center fielder.
He did, but it took him out of his rhythm. Even if he, that's Juan Soto. He could always hit the crap out of it there. But his whole gimmick of working the pitches and everything, I really feel like from that point forward, I didn't feel the same Soto locked in this at-bat, tap-bat.
Let's go to Eric on Long Island. What's up, Eric?
Listen, it's funny you guys mentioned it because as Big Christmas hit the homer, I screamed at the top of my lungs, Dave effing Roberts. Well, just, you know, you can fill in the blank.
Yeah.
At the time, it's just... You know, it's crazy. One thing that wasn't even mentioned, how often does a defensive replacement come in and in the last two innings for defensive purposes and make two errors?
Right.
Anthony Rizzo's defense, two errors
yes.
in the last two innings. He's brought in for defensive reasons and makes two errors.
Well, let's address this, Eric, because I'm glad you brought that up. I'm happy you brought that up. So yesterday on this program, when the lineup came out, I was very critical of Anthony Rizzo not starting. I did not like the decision. With that said, the main reason I had for wanting to play Anthony Rizzo, even against the lefty, is he's so good defensively. I'm going to still defend myself, and I'll tell you why. Did a little research this morning. I think research matters. I think research is healthy. I know the answer to the question I'm about to ask. So you obviously know it's going in a certain direction. How many times in the last 5 years... has Anthony Rizzo been put in a game for defense? How many times? You guys want to guess?
None.
Play game? None would be a good answer. One time. One time. Wow. Anthony Rizzo, who is a wonderful defensive first baseman, and I stand by that, was put in a spot he's never put in before. And I didn't realize that at the time, Tika. I'll be the first to tell you, I wish I said that yesterday. I wish I said, hey, by the way, Tika, another reason why I think Anthony Rizzo should play is he's not a good option as a defensive replacement because he never does it. He's older. He's coming off an injury. It's cold outside. This doesn't feel like a good defensive replacement guy.
Right, and he butchered it because, you know, or butchered a play because he's not used to it.
Right.
Right, and I mean, that was an easy scoop for someone who's done it a million times or has been versed in that for most of his career. And look, a lot of the mistakes that happened, they didn't go on to hurt the team that badly, but it's still something you're worried about because now you have no confidence in it.
Yeah, I think you've got to reconsider Anthony Rizzo as a utility. I'm bringing him in for defense.
Agreed.
And I know I can't prove that the reason Anthony Rizzo, and technically, I'll be technical because I'm the geek who scores the games, he only made one error,
yes.
But he made two miscues. One could have been called an error, the other one was called an error. And the error he committed in the ninth inning quickly got erased when Josh Naylor grounded into a double play. So I get that, you know, technically it didn't come back and haunt them, and I can never prove that the stiffness of Rizzo never being a defensive replacement, coming off an injury, that's why he struggled defensively. But the reason I'll go with it is because I watch him play defense enough.
Right.
He's a good defensive first baseman. How do you explain how stiff and unready he looked on the two defensive tries he had after coming in for defense? How do you explain it?
I don't think you can explain it. I hate the word rust. I hate when people say, oh, he's, you know, it's just rusty because he hasn't done it in a while. But I think it's a mental rust. It's not a physical rust. It's just understanding exactly how you do something without thinking about it. And all of a sudden, we talk about this with quarterbacks all the time. Once you start thinking about it, you tend to make mistakes because you're thinking about it. And when you miss time, especially as much as Rizzo has missed over the last 2 years, right, ultimately, you don't have as much trust in yourself as you probably had 4 or 5 years ago when you were a regular and you didn't have to think at all.
Yeah, and that's why from here on out, Aaron Boone needs to play Anthony Rizzo every day at first base. Because even in the one plate appearance he got in the 10th inning, he never actually got up to the plate because his intimidation caused an intentional walk. And then Anthony Volpe came up and obviously came up small and struck out. I just think that while John Birdie's done a fairly good job at first base, Anthony Rizzo is the clear best option at first base, and Aaron Boone's got to quit bleeping around just because there's a lefty on the mound. And hopefully last night kind of made that clear. Let's go to John in Garden City. How are we doing today, John?
Godwin left the mark. I mean, I'm going to be 55. I can think of a handful of games. Game 7 against the Diamondbacks. The Red Sox when Johnny Damon hit the home run. But that game, I was telling my kids, my 9-year-old, I says, this is where you learn it ain't over since it's over. It ain't over till it's over.
Yep.
A lot like with Susan, you know, that's baseball Susan, however you want to put it. Here's what I'm worried about. I'm a guy who believes in the baseball gods. Cleveland may be preordained to win the World Series this year. What? It may be their turn. These are the kind of things. No, hear me out. I'll pull an Evan on you. Tell me who's gone longer without winning a World Series. Are we?
No.
It's Cleveland.
They're the number one team
now. 78 years.
I get you.
They are the number one team. These are the mighty Yankees. These are the gold standard team. Maybe things like this have to happen.
Well,
for
okay.
A team like that.
John, that last part, I agree with you, and I'll relate it to the Mets. Sometimes when a team hasn't won in a long time, and obviously the Cleveland baseball championship drought is far greater than the Met drought. I understand that. It gets broken in an epic way. See the Boston Red Sox, see the Chicago Cubs. So if you're telling me the Guardians are about to write a script to break their championship curse, and that's like chapter 2, because they've already had a few chapters with what they did to Detroit in the division series, maybe you're right. But now I pivot to this. If the OMG New York Mets are going to write the script that maybe we all started falling in love with over the last few weeks, no better way to do it than coming back from 3-1 down against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the guy who would be describing all of that action that we hope happens over the next week and a half is the voice of the New York Mets. And he joins us right now, courtesy of Bigelow Tea. Grab a mug and tea proudly. The great Howie Rose. Howie from Citi Field, how are you, sir?
I'm well. Grab a gallon and tea proudly, and maybe 2 gallons tomorrow, because these guys are flying overnight to L.A. if they win today and tonight. So, caffeine up.
What is your feeling on this series? I try to, like, think back to all the 3-1 comebacks, how they come out of nowhere, but obviously the Dodgers have beaten the Mets up the last 2 days. We know what happened in Game 1. What's your feel for where we stand right now going into Game 5?
You're going to hate me for this, because it's going to replicate the worst, most mundane cliche that we hear in sports every day. But I'm not looking past today. And, you hear it to the point of nausea. We have to play one game at a time. But there's a lot of truth in that, because anybody goes out there thinking they've got to win 3 in a row tonight. Well, you can't win 3 in a row tonight. You can win tonight. And I asked Carlos Mendoza just within the hour, can you tell if there's a dangerous lack of focus within any of the players in that clubhouse to where they're, you know, getting the feeling that, all right, they're starting to check out. They think it's daunting. They know what's happened just the last 2 nights. But, you know, he maintains, not that I would have expected him to say anything else anyway, but he says, no, from the minute he got into the clubhouse, he says it's the same as it's been all year. They're joking around. They're laughing. He's already addressed the position players as a group. He doesn't do a whole lot of that. He tends to talk to them in smaller groups, but he's spoken to the position players. He's going to talk to the pitchers later, just sort of take their temperature. But so far, he's not concerned that any focus has started to wane. When the game starts, we'll see. But, you know, again, the message is just stay on point and in the moment, and don't worry about how steep the hill looks.
You know, Howie, it's interesting you say that, because from a player standpoint, you're probably right. But from a overarching your opinion standpoint, doesn't it just feel like the Dodgers are just better? Right, the guys who weren't performing early on in the series, the top of the lineup with, I mean, Otani was, but Mookie Betts and et cetera, those guys, once they start going on, aren't the Dodgers just better?
Well, they didn't win 98 games by mistake, but by the same token, Tiki, I go far enough back, of course, to remember 1969, the greatest year and always will be in the history of the franchise. By any objective measure, the Baltimore Orioles were better. They'd won 109 games that year to the Mets' 100. They had, you know, great players all over the place. But the Mets beat them in 5. So I don't know that you could really look at that and use it as a determining factor as to, you know, what the mindset should be approaching the game. And I'm not blowing smoke, you know, to you necessarily, but just as a group, I have always been so incredibly impressed by the innate ability of a professional athlete to shut out what is considered outside noise, not to be necessarily overwhelmed by a situation that looks daunting, and just to go out there and maintain the tunnel vision that's necessary to get them through a particular game on a particular day. I'm just in awe of what you guys are capable of doing in situations like this. So, yeah, you look at it on paper. Of course the Dodgers, you know, stack up as the better team, but that doesn't mean anything in this series because there's two teams playing, and the other one feels they have just as much a right to be there.
And maybe I'm holding out hope. I go back, not that I remember this. This is just history, but I try to think of 1960 and say, can't this be Yankees Pirates where, the Mets are losing every game by 8 or 9 runs, but they all count the same. Go win a couple of games by 1 run and write that kind of script.
Yeah, you know, they won't win it at home, obviously, but, you know, can you see the latter-day equivalent of Bill Mazeroski? Let's say Jeff McNeil hitting a home run, you know, in the, what would be the 9th inning, I guess, to put the Mets in front and Diaz holding on to it. Yeah, that'd be great. But, again, we're looking ahead of ourselves here, and I'd be lying if I said that World Series hasn't entered my mind the last two nights either.
Sure.
I think I might have mentioned it in one of the last two games, if only to create the historic perspective. That, you know, there are series like that where one team dominates, but only dominates 3 times and get beat the other 4 times.
You're right. Now, you mentioned the name Jeff McNeil. We're talking to the great Howie Rose, who'll be calling the game later today. This is tough. Like, at what point in the course of a series do you say, let me make some changes? Carlos Mendoza's made a few. Winker for J.D. Martinez, to me, he should have done 2 days ago. But what's your opinion on going to Jeff McNeil? He's only had 3 at-bats since coming off the IL and replacing Jose Iglesias, who's obviously struggled over the last few weeks.
I asked Carlos, again, within the hour, if any of this was based on an observation that Iglesias has played so much more than anybody anticipated that he would. He's been playing every day down the stretch and into the postseason. And, you know, given his age, he's 34. I asked Carlos if part of this decision was the thinking that maybe it's caught up to Iglesias a little bit. And he really didn't think so. You know, it's just that he likes the matchup with McNeil. And it's not so much a roll of the dice as it is just calculated that McNeil can handle this. And, you know, you again fall back on the fact that Jeff did win a batting title just 2 years ago. He doesn't have hardly any experience at all against Flaherty, just 1-for-3 against him, so that's not a determining factor. You can call it a manager's hunch if you want. They always ascribe it to something a lot more detailed and calculated than that, but I think the time is right, to be honest with you.
Mm.
And you know
now
the other thing? I'm sorry. You know,
no, go ahead. Keep going.
They needed. I think they needed a couple more left-handed bats in there. Again, Flaherty has reverse splits. I don't think that they're all that worried about that. Jesse Winker stung the ball once last night. I think on a different night, that ball probably leaves the park. Obviously, J.D. Martinez has struggled, and so you know, Carlos is making the moves that I think make a lot of sense.
Howie, talk to us about David Peterson being put in this role where he's got to be the savior, so to speak, and he's going up against Jack Flaherty, who's been, you know, phenomenal. But David Peterson has, especially the last part of the season, has been exactly what you would want. Be used in any capacity possible, and he seems to have come through. But this is really high pressure right now.
Yeah, he's been in some high pressure situations in this postseason. And that, I think, is one of the reasons that they're so comfortable using him here. Remember, after the Mets came back in the 9th inning and took the lead in Milwaukee in the final game and did so as dramatically as they did with Alonso's home run and then tacking another run on, you know, Peterson, who's a sinker baller and has gotten a lot of outs with his sinker this year, you know, got a game-ending and series-ending double play. And he's, I think, established himself this year to an extent that the Mets had been hoping he would ever since they made him a first-round draft pick. And he's not a kid either. He's 28, 29 years old. So I think he's right for the moment. He is stretched out, even though he's been pitching primarily out of the bullpen lately. It's really not an issue. Carlos says he's probably going to have around 80 pitches or so today, which in a best-case scenario can get you as many as 6 innings. And believe me, he'd really like to get that kind of length out of Peterson. Now, if he's got to go long, if Peterson struggles early, Kodai Senga is probably the first guy out of the pen. If they're able to push Peterson towards the 6th and perhaps 7th innings, then it's a matter of mixing and matching based on the matchups, and I don't think you see Senga in that situation. Senga, to me, probably is only in a long relief role as opposed to getting a big out for you later in a game. But you never know. You know, again, that's where we're at right now. It's Johnny Holstaff behind Peterson.
Would you have considered sticking with that formula they used against the Phillies and they tried in game one of starting Sang and have Peterson coming in after him? Or were you ready to kind of say, forget this, let's just go to David Peterson?
Well, I think, and I said this on the air last night, that it's just my opinion that given what they saw from Senga in game one of this series, I just didn't think you could take the chance because you just don't know. He's at a point right now where essentially he's pitching a rehab game in the National League Championship Series. And, you know, to do it in the first game is one thing, but when your season is on the line as it is today, my opinion was and still is, and obviously theirs is the same, that it's too great a risk to take. And so run Peterson out there. If you've got to go to Senga because David falters early, so be it. But I'm all in on Peterson getting the start.
We're talking to Howie Rose coming up in about 2 hours, 10 minutes or so, game five of the National League Championship Series between the Mets and the Dodgers. The Mets desperately trying to keep their season alive after losing the last two games against the Dodgers. It's tough. Being in the building, Howie, I felt like the crowds were great. And then it's just like the air comes out of the sails, and it's tough to maintain that energy and excitement when, A, it's cold out, and, B, even with a pitch clock, the games have taken 3.5 to 4 hours.
Yeah. Well, that's because this team walks so many stinking hitters.
Yes.
And the Dodgers are so patient. So, you know, that exacerbates an existing problem that the Mets have about walking too many. But, you know, I'm glad you brought up the atmosphere in the crowd last night because you were at the ballpark last night, Evan, right?
Yes,
okay,
yes,
so I doubt you were listening on radio while I was saying this. So let me ask you if you remember, and it was, I think, just before Mookie Betts hit the 2-run home run against Maton in the 6th inning. But the crowd suddenly started to chant, "Let's go, Mets."
Yes.
And it was right after the walk that Buto threw to Ohtani, which was the last pitch that Buto would throw. The crowd started, "Let's go, Mets." And I remember saying on the air that I think the fans recognizing that they were flat and that maybe the season was at the crossroads here, it's almost like subliminally they got together and started chanting, "Let's go, Mets," to try to revive the energy in the building, and then Mookie sapped it right out of that ballpark with a home run. I thought it was amazing because I said that just before Mookie hit the homer, and I think I incorporated it into the call. So that's how it felt to me sitting in the booth with a headset on. Were you feeling it that way also?
1,000%. Like, you're trying to root this team on, and I thought it was cool that there was that energy because I think what the fans recognized was, look, they're already trailing in this game 5-2, and runs are so hard to come by. If they're going to win this game, this is the biggest moment of the game. And so I think they were almost like fans are trying to will the Mets to victory. And then the other killer part was after Betts hits the home run, which takes the air out of the sails, the air comes back in because they put that rally together and have the bases loaded, nobody out, and the place was electric again. And then that was the ultimate because they couldn't even get a run across.
Yeah, that was the end of it right there, really. Yep. And that's, you know, part of what happens when you go 0-10 with men in scoring position, as they did, and have got to figure a way to be better today.
Yeah, Howie, I don't want to be negative, but I just for the sake of talking about it, if this season ends tonight for the New York Mets, how is this team going to be remembered?
I think quite admirably. And it's interesting that you say this team and remembered because, you know, whenever it ends, even if they go all the way and then win the World Series, whenever it ends, that's it for this group because, you know, the careers of players in given cities are ephemeral to begin with because of, you know, the transient nature of this game now. But in this particular clubhouse, there are a number of guys who are eligible for free agency at the end of the year. And some of the core players here, most notably, of course, Pete Alonso, but their best starting pitchers, Severino, 1-year deal, up. Manaea undoubtedly going to opt out. Free agent. Quintana's deal up. So this group knows that this is their one kick at the can. And if it doesn't end the way, you know, we all hope it does, you know, dramatically and magically and wind up down the Canyon of Heroes. Even if it ends tonight, it'll sting for a little bit. You'll wish it could have been a better showing, at least in the National League Championship Series. But then when you're laying around in December or January and you think back on 2 or 3 weeks of sheer mayhem between the travel and the dramatic endings and the pressurized games, nothing that happens from here on out, in my opinion, is going to put even the trace of a negative slant on this team and what it's accomplished this year. It has been such a fun ride, and the most enjoyable ones are the ones we don't see coming, right? And nobody could have seen this coming. Forget about back at the end of May, but even as the summer transpired and they were trying to, you know, hang on and contend for a wild card spot, they fell 4 games back and you thought, all right, it's slipping away again, and that was in August. But somebody's going to write a book about a 10 or 12 day stretch from the first trip with the hurricane in Atlanta and the back and forth between Atlanta and Milwaukee and all of the dramatic endings. That's what I'm going to dwell on, those wonderfully dramatic, exciting moments that this team has given us, whether they take it all the way or not.
Well, let us hope that we've got more games to watch and more games for you to call. Game 5 today. Howie, we really appreciate you coming on before the game.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. The great Howie Rose, presented by Bigelow Tea. Grab a mug and tea proudly. He brings up a very, very good point. A point that I don't love to harp on or talk about yet. There will be a day for it. It may be a Rico Brugna later tonight, Teak. And that is the fact that this Met roster, whether you like it or not, is going to be very, very different next season. That's the reality. That's baseball. That's free agents all over the place, whether it's in the rotation, whether it's the core of position players. Like, I can get into the specifics on it, but this is going to be a very different team. And that doesn't mean it's going to be bad next year. Like, my guess right now is the Mets are going to go into the offseason. There's going to be a lot of changes. We're going to argue about them, and there are going to be big changes, some of which are going to be very, very exciting. And so when the Mets come to spring training in 2025, you can bet your ass the expectations are going to be very different. We are not going to be having debates on, should they sign J.D. Martinez? It's the difference between 78 wins and 82 wins. It's going to be different. And difference sometimes is good. Like, they may come in as favorites and then back it up and win 105 games. But this story that we've all witnessed, it's about to end, good or bad, and then it's going to be completely different in 2025.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.